comments, any citizens wishing to speak, may do so at this time. Are there any citizens' comments? Last call. All right, citizens' comments are closed. I do not have any comments myself. Are there any fire youth and government assigned tonight? Are there any other supervisors have comments this evening? All right, we will move on to approval of the June 6th minutes. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All right, motion by Supervisor Gearson, second by Supervisor Stockdale. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the minutes are approved. On to number 5, resolution to approve the appointment of Zach Rodriguez to serve on the Kenosha County Board of Health.
Mr. Chairman, what I could say is that I was contacted by Supervisor Rodriguez. He requested a motion to postpone to the next regular meeting, indicating that he had a conflict because of work. So I would make that motion.
Okay, so we have a motion to postpone this appointment until our next human services meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Supervisor Gearson, second by Supervisor Stocker. Any discussion?
I'll be voting against the motion. So I think that we have enough information. We've served with them, we know them. So I think we can vote without him here. So.
All right, is there any further discussion?
Roll call.
Okay. All right, so we'll move to a vote on the motion to postpone. Supervisor Gearson?
Aye.
Supervisor Stocker?
Aye.
Supervisor Kubicki?
Nay.
Supervisor Gus?
Nay.
Supervisor Gus?
Nay.
I will vote aye. So I'm not sure we do.
It fails.
It failed.
Okay, so the motion failed. All right, so we will move on to the appointment. Do we have anybody presenting this evening?
I believe it's included in your packet. Okay. The county exec has asked for him to be replace Supervisor O'Day.
That was God.
Sorry, it's me.
God said something to you. I don't know what it was, but.
I don't
know if I want to be quite close to you. So he'd be filling the spot that was occupied by Supervisor O'Day for a number of years and would be on our Board of Health. So you know him, I know him, and he's been a supervisor for a number of years, and would ask that that be considered. Thank you.
All right. Is there a motion to move the appointment?
Chairman, I would move approval of the appointment.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Supervisor Stocker seconds. Any discussion? Supervisor Gunn.
Yes, in light of the last couple of years in the health department, I think it's a crucial piece to the county's function right now. And I don't, based on what I've seen from Supervisor Rodriguez since he's been a supervisor, I don't feel that he's a fit for the Board of Health. So I won't be supporting that.
All right, are there any other supervisor comments? Or discussion, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will not be supporting the appointment as well. In the last 6 months, I've seen Mr. Rodriguez be very combative and argumentative with department heads and staff when they're trying to present their reasoning as to why something has happened the way it has. And because it doesn't fit in his realm of reality, he becomes very vindictive and mean and unprofessional. And I cannot support a supervisor with that type of temperament on the Board of Health. So that's why I will not be voting in support of his appointment.
Okay, is there any further discussion? Okay, we can take the vote.
Roll call.
All right, roll call is requested. Supervisor Gearson.
Aye.
Supervisor Stocker.
Aye.
Supervisor Kubicki.
No.
Supervisor Gunz.
No.
Supervisor Uhas.
No.
And the chair will vote aye. I believe we have a fail. 3-3. The resolution does fail. All right, moving on to number 6, resolution to approve the appointment of Daniel Gaske to serve on the Racine Kenosha Community Action Agency.
So Supervisor Gaske is here this evening. He would be filling a county board spot, which is a requirement for the Racine Kenosha Community Action Agency Board, and I ask that you consider his appointment for that Thank you.
Supervisor Gaskin, do you have any comments?
Not unless the committee has any questions for me.
Okay, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move approval of the appointment.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Pearson, second by Supervisor Ugas. Is there any discussion? All right, seeing none.
Roll call, please.
All right, roll call is requested. Supervisor Gaskin.
Aye.
Supervisor Stocker.
Aye.
Supervisor Kubicki.
Aye.
Supervisor Gaskin.
Aye.
Supervisor Ugas.
Aye.
And chair votes aye. All right, that passes. Thank you for coming. All right, next one, number 7, we have the resolution to approve the appointment of Carrie Foss as Director of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health Services.
Good evening. I am pleased tonight to present this before this committee. Carrie has more recently been our Behavioral Health Manager at the Division of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health Services. Came over to us from Kenosha Human Development Services in 2000. Prior to that, worked at least 20 years in that agency doing a lot of work in the behavioral health world. We believe that she possesses the certainly the qualities and characteristics that we're looking in a director, and would ask that this committee approve her appointment. And she is here this evening if you have questions.
Do you have anything you'd like to comment on?
I just wanted to kind of give just a quick overview of my first 27 years of my career. I started in juvenile crisis at KHDS, worked my way through every single emergency mental health service, landing at director of the Crisis Prevention Center. I started the Medicaid billing for crisis services, provided pilot programs for functional screens. Spent a lot of time doing NITEC studies, which expanded services for adult crisis, care center beds, which led to 3 times the amount of care center admissions and hospitalizations for 51. Started conversations with Lake Behavioral Health. That lasted 6 years in 3 different positions, which has now landed us to our final Lake Behavioral Health contract. In the last 3.5 years, now as Behavioral Health Manager, I've expanded the largest program, CCS's accessibility. We have actually built a Kenosha County Behavioral Health image for our community. Opioid Task Force started human services on the go. We modernized the behavioral health resource guide, published in both English, Spanish, hard copy, and online. IMD and residential monitoring has increased, allowed us to expand residential providers, afforded us the ability to manage the IMD budget far more efficiently and effectively. And mostly, I am proud of the professional relationships that I have built, understanding that accountability is the way I'm going to maintain those. Currently, I'm also the chair of the opioid settlement panel. I am the chair of the 51 committee and the chair of the Kenosha County Substance Abuse Coalition. I've collaborated with aging programs, supervisors, and staff to provide services for transportation and the ADRC to behavioral health clients that need both systems services. I look forward to applying my efforts in measuring accountability, outcomes, quality, and modernizing programs to meet the evolving needs of Kenosha County residents. I see leadership as a privilege that I have to earn every day. I intend on doing that by continuing my partnership with all human services divisions, with county government, all of its partners, and while I can have an opportunity to expand my role of leadership. So I just want to say thank you for considering to allow me to serve Kenosha County as the director of the Division of Aging Disability Services.
All right, thank you very much. I will entertain a motion.
Second.
All right, moved by Supervisor Ugas, second by Supervisor Kirsten. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion passes. We are passing the...
Sorry, I goofed up and put it on the wrong line. So you can maybe have to show
sure.
If you voted
make
yes.
Sure you sign the previous votes, please. All right, next we move to our presentation with the update on the opioid program.
Hello everyone, and thank you, Rebecca Dutter from Human Services. And I want to thank Supervisor Gantz for helping me put this presentation together. I know we've waited several months to get this here, and we kept changing it to make sure that we were getting all of the information that you all needed. Well, I'm going to be the one talking to you. I just want to let you know that Carrie is here, and Lori Palmer is also here from our health division. So if there's questions or anything that we need to provide clarification on, let me know and we can stop and we can bring those two up here to answer the additional questions. So one of the first things we wanted to talk about was the updated toxicity deaths. Unfortunately, you will see on the screen, although it's in very fine print,
that we have 57 confirmed toxicity deaths in 2022. That number is still pending because there are still some that are still out for labs. Unfortunately, 44 of those already involve opioids. So we had 44 total last year. We're at 44, or for 2021, we're at 44 for 2022, and I would expect that those numbers, unfortunately, will stay consistent because a lot of those, as you see, 37 of those involve fentanyl, which has taken its big, it's got its claws into our county like it does a lot of other counties. Prevention. Obviously, we need to provide prevention to the community if we're going to be able to make a dent into this this issue that we have. So over the past couple of years, we have implemented a lot of prevention, starting with, and Carrie just mentioned it, a little bit with our outreach events, Human Services on the Go. We have partnered with law enforcement to distribute flyers in areas where there have been overdoses. And the reason behind that is oftentimes we're finding that the fentanyl is being distributed in those areas, or it's being laced in those areas, and so we want to make sure that we're getting that information out to those specific areas. Law enforcement is on the scene of all of these, so they can do the immediate distribution to family and friends to make sure that people are aware. And those have changed. We've done multiple based on the type of overdoses that we're seeing or the type of drug that is being used where the increase. Oftentimes we see like little clusters of overdoses. We have just created a new position with using the opioid abatement funds that you all voted on. I'm a community education and prevention specialist. He actually just started
yesterday.
And that will be focusing us on our children and starting that prevention a little bit earlier. So this is an expansion of the DARE program. DARE right now only hits a couple of grades. This is going to beget those starting most likely with high schoolers and then moving into middle school to start talking early on about how we can normalize the conversations around drug use so that people aren't afraid to talk about it and we can start seeing an impact with, you know, this is what happens when you don't know what you're taking. So, you know, a lot of the overdoses are not from people taking illicit drugs. They're taking things that they think are prescriptions that they have gotten, unfortunately, the wrong way, but they turn out to be laced with fentanyl, and then we see a lot of these unfortunate overdoses. That position will also do a lot more community engagement so that we can continue to increase our presence talking about prevention in the school system, but also within the community. We did kind of rebrand our Behavioral Health Resource Center at KHDS of KIDS to be able to answer the questions of the community as to where to go for help and to also provide some prevention services. Once our new building is open, I would hope, and even sooner than that, that you all will take a trip over to the Behavioral Health Resource Center to look and see a lot of what we've done there. We find that a lot of times, especially in behavioral health, people don't want to actually talk to someone. They want to go in and grab a flyer. They want to go in and know where to go. They don't want to have that conversation yet. So we've put up like kiosks in their general lobby area so that people can do that grab and go, but then there's also room for them to talk with someone in the resource center if they have, you know, specific questions or they want additional information. We also sort of reformatted the Substance Abuse Coalition and the Opioid Task Force. It was doing a wonderful job before. It's really more focused on task now, on seeing some outcomes, doing some projects. The task force is very involved in a lot of the things that are that go on as far as the outreach, and a lot of those task force members participate in the outreach that Human Services is able to do. We did, as Carrie talked about, rebranded our resource guides, and we created those both in English and Spanish. Those they have been widely distributed. How many did we print the first time around?
7,500.
And those are almost gone, and we're on our next.
And then 3,500 in Spanish.
Right.
And so over 10,000.
Those are also available on the web. Those are also available on a lot of pages. You can get them through Facebook pages, but it's been something that has really a lot of people have needed and a lot of people have taken.
You can get them right here tonight. I'll put them on the
there table. You go. You can have it at your fingertips while we're talking about it. We also partnered with Kane Communications, which is a marketing firm out of the Milwaukee area, through some substance abuse dollars that we received from the state to do some marketing for us around behavioral health in general, but especially around opioid, And they are going to be working on a YouTube channel for us so that folks are able to actually see little snippets of YouTube videos on real-time people who have unfortunately used or family members of those that have used or along that line. Again, just spreading the word of what can happen when you take something that unfortunately can be laced with something that's deadly. Response and treatment. I know we've talked a lot about, and a lot of times we refer to it as the SAMHSA grant, but it's actually called the CORI project, which is the Kenosha Opioid Response Initiative. That is an initiative that the health department does. Currently, what they do outside of doing a lot of Narcan trainings is they respond to those folks that have overdosed in the city. And they're going to the door of where these folks are and talking to the family members or the person themselves to try and connect them to services, support, and resources. Again, and Lori is here. She can certainly talk in more in depth about what that kind of entails. As you know, we've done a significant amount of Narcan training. And although I don't consider Narcan training treatment, I do want to kind of preface that by saying we saw a lot in the news last week that we had 5 deadly overdoses in Kenosha County, all over the age of 50. But, and that's not good, but I also want to let you know that we also, in that period of time, so 724 to 730, just in the city of Kenosha had 8 Narcan administration where people were revived. And again, a lot of these, it's 4 men, 4 women, some from the city of Kenosha, some from outside of our area. They range in age from 20 to 51. But again, Narcan is making a difference. I understand that it doesn't look like it when you see that there have been that many deaths, but I think you have to balance that with the amount of people that have been saved by Narcan being out in the community. We also have a MAT in the jail program, and MAT is medication-assisted treatment. So these are evidence-based programs in which the health department, in connection with aging, disability, and behavioral health, and the sheriff's department on this one, work with folks that have been identified in the jail as being either people who have used opioids or are, and they're soon to be released, and are willing to accept the treatment. So this is funded by a state grant. The Sheriff's Department has the same grant, and they're used in conjunction with each other so that we're able to, it's the same program, we're just able to expand it to more people. Same thing for the next one, which is medication-assisted treatment. Professional Services Group, along with the Health Department and Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health, provide assessment, counseling, case management, labs, medications, and monitoring. So these are for folks that we've talked about in the past are in our Vivitrol program. It's more expansive than just the Vivitrol program, but I think people know it by that name, so that's why we refer to it as that. That is also funded by a variety of different state grants. There's several grants that go to meet that need of that medication-assisted treatment program. And that is typically for people who are in the community. They're not people that have just left jail. Those are folks that are being served in that other funding stream. We also have a treatment court, again, funded by a state grant. That is meant to, for people that have had committed an offense that have behavioral health needs, it's connecting them with support and services. It's a really intense program. It's a lengthy program, often over 2 years for folks to graduate from that program. But we find that the folks that are able to make it through that program, they're rate of remission or going back into using is reduced greatly. There are private clinics within Kenosha County that offer medication-assisted treatment and other programs to help with opioid use. And then we certainly utilize our care center, which is our crisis stabilization center, for folks that need assistance with substance use as well. If it just needs to get them out of the environment, if they need a place to stay for a few days so we can connect them to services, or we can get them started in medication-assisted treatment, we can utilize the care center. Future opportunities, and I think this is where the three of us back here probably get the most excited. I think the first one is being able to respond real-time to overdoses. That's really hard to do. Milwaukee is able to do it. with a very large grant. We are not able to do that at this current time, but it's certainly something that is being looked at in the future, is when EMS responds to a person who's overdosing, having a peer support specialist or having somebody that has some substance use counseling available to them to connect those folks to the services right then and there, because unfortunately, we usually can't find them after the fact. Now, Corey does a great job of doing that, but it's hard sometimes to catch the people that they don't want to talk to you after it's happened. We all know that that real-time approach is usually where you get people to have the most success. There have been a lot of talk, and certainly we have been talking about this for well over a year, about a behavioral health walk-in center. We all know what a walk-in clinic is like. This would be something that would be very specific to behavioral health needs. It would certainly could help with folks that are having, mental health issues, as well as those that are having substance abuse issues, where they would be able to see someone quickly to be able to get medication or connected to counseling. I think that would take a lot of burden off of a lot of our law enforcement who are doing a lot of this in the community, as well as to get people before they end up in crisis. So this is certainly something that we've studied extensively. It's happening in other states. We don't have any in Wisconsin. We have a walk-in clinic for youth in Wisconsin out of the Children's Hospital in Milwaukee. And then there are some clinics that state that they do behavioral health, but there's no specific one in the state of Wisconsin just for behavioral health. So that's certainly something that's on our radar for the future. We would love to be able to expand, and we're in the process of doing this, substance use screenings, which is also called SBIRT. So we are going to start that by having every person that's admitted into the care center have an SBIRT done. What that will do for us is to kind of let us know if the person isn't self-disclosing substance use needs, that there could potentially be some substance use on board. So while they're at the care center, we can start talking to them about substance use and getting them involved with the resource center, or getting referrals out to services if it's medication-assisted treatment, or if it's one of our other programs that it's available to them. We would love to be able to expand peer support. We just recently had the opioid abatement panel was able to put forth a request to be able to fund peer support training. So unfortunately, the way that peer support is done in Wisconsin is that you have to be certified through the state of Wisconsin. There are very limited trainings. And what we're hearing from those in the community who would like to be peer support is that it can be a 2 to 3 year process to get the training. So we have been able to secure an opportunity to be able to host that here in the beginning part of 2024. And we have commitments from almost all of our providers that if we are able to train peer support and get them certified, that they would be able to use them in their day-to-day work, which has been something that we know has been a need for a while now.
I'm just going to add to that is when we're getting baseline data from all of these private medically assisted treatment clinics, every single one of them shared that the best outcome measure was always connected to the individual that came in already engaged with a peer support specialist, that person had the best success in maintaining recovery for an extended period of time. So, it's not something we have to contemplate, is this helpful? We're hearing this from the people who know it right now.
Fentanyl test equipment, and certainly Lori can speak to this further, but looking to purchase some fentanyl testing equipment for our medication-assisted treatment programs. Right now, the testing that we do does not test for fentanyl, and unfortunately, if you give any of our medication-assisted medications to a person that has used fentanyl, you can put them into withdrawal. Right. So. Looking to be able to see if we can bring that to us, that would certainly help our medication-assisted treatment program. The health department is going to receive some Narcan vending machines, again, via a grant to the state of Wisconsin. One will be placed at the KHDS
Indoor, the Crisis Prevention Center, right on 12th Avenue and 60th Street, will be the host of an indoor Narcan vending machine, and we will have an outdoor vending machine outside of the Sharing Center out in Cheever. So we'll have two locations.
Yeah, just expanding access to Narcan again, not as a, not knowing that it's not a treatment, but knowing that it is something that's available in our community to be able to assist when people do unfortunately have an overdose. And then certainly looking at a co-responder model with law enforcement or in our 911 centers. This is a model that is happening in other parts of our community, and it's putting a typically a behavioral health person with law enforcement or in the 911 center. So when calls come in, that person can get dispatched with law enforcement to be on hand to help mainly to decrease the crisis, but certainly also to get them to the resources and services, sort of again, in that real-time model of you're here, you're having a crisis, let's get you the support and services that you need. When it comes to opioids, again, making sure that they're aware of all of the options that are available to them and all of the resources that are available to them in that moment in time. And then we had a request to talk about the opioid settlements and where we were financially with that. So total funds that we've received, I'm sorry.
Could I just pause
Sure.
real quick? Does any of us have any questions regarding this first part of the presentation? Just be brief, two resumes.
Be brief on my
No, I'm just...
That isn't going
to
happen.
I still want to get to this.
Okay.
The second part.
I could be pretty long-winded, especially
at
night.
Thank
you. That
sure.
was that piece of it was so far a great presentation. I'm going to cast my vote for I'm not in favor of vending machines.
I'm not.
That it's like I know I'm going to do it, so I'm going to go buy one or get one. I'm not in favor of that. I love the prevention piece. You know, I've struggled in mental health and now this, and I really look at prevention and how we're going to do that. I mean, the treatment court you brought up is great. The walk-in clinic, I strongly suggest we move in that direction because I love these and I'm going to look over it, but some people are not going to want to read it. They're going to want to go talk to somebody in person and see if they can get that help. I mean, if I'm thinking about doing it, I'm going to do it, I did it, and I want to stop. I mean, those are all things that maybe if I had somebody to walk into and talk to, it might be better. And that dovetails into the peer support. I think we ought to, and I would ask to have you come back and just focus on that.
Sure.
How can we get on board with that? Because if we can get a community or members of the community in a peer support program,
right.
I mean, that's exciting because
Absolutely.
that really says, hey, I've done it, I've been there, this is how you need to get out. To me, that's just a huge piece to this.
Carrie, how many mm-hmm. spots will we have in our training in 24?
18. We'll be able to train 18 individuals. We're going to do a virtual platform. It's for 6 weeks. It's several days a week. It'll be in the evening. We have a Carrie Pint, who is on the opioid panel, and she's part of our recovery community. She has 14 people that really would like to become a certified peer support specialist. Some have been waiting 3 years to get into the lottery to get this training. So we have this opportunity to purchase our own training and fill it and have just these great commitments from our programs that would love to hire peer support specialists, and we could grow them right here
and
use them in so many different capacities.
I think that's a huge piece to this.
It is.
It's a huge piece to this. And also, I know that I asked for a report back, and I know it's way too early from the guy who's or the whoever is in that position that's going out to the schools.
Right.
Because that to me is just, I mean, that's where you start. If we could teach kindergartners to use a computer, we could teach them not to use drugs. So I'm really behind that too. So, you know, I beat my head against the wall for mental health, and now this and. That's part of why I asked for this, and I kind of helped you structure how I wanted to see where we're at, where we're going, you know, what's happening. But I really think that we're moving in the right direction, but this is really a problem. I mean, when I see youth's lives pass, it saddens me to no end. And, you know, so that's The last thing I'm going to bring up is, could I get a miniature, quick, brief report on the SAMHSA grant and how that affects this?
Sure.
And what its mandate was?
Sure.
So that I can know mentally for myself?
Yeah, absolutely.
That somebody has a handle on where we're going with that big grant?
Absolutely. Lori's here, and she's got a handle on it.
So, an update. We have just closed year two of the grant yesterday. So today began year three. There are two main objectives or goals in that grant that we focus on. The first one was Narcan training. The goal was 700 Narcan trainings on an annual basis, and that cross covers all 4 years of the grant. So the first 2 years, we did 1,323 trained on Narcan. So we almost doubled that. The second grant year we just completed, we did 1,676 individuals trained on Narcan. So that's going fine. And that began almost immediately in year one. The second and primary goal of this grant is the CORI team, Kenosha Overdose Response Team, which Rebecca spoke of. That was slow to uptake. And quite frankly, the rationale was we didn't have the right people in the jobs. That grant supports a supervisor, and it supports two public health strategists. We went through two supervisors, and we went through two public health strategists in those 2 years that just didn't fit the qualifications. One left, and the second one, it just wasn't the best role for him. I had the ability in this transition period I'm in, we were just about to interview and hire for a new supervisor. So we have him in place now. His name is Sondale. He comes from public health from Milwaukee and has a good knowledge base of substance use and of HIV and other areas of public health. We've hired two new public strategists. One internally came from our clinic. And the second one we just hired, she just graduated with our public health degree. So she's a beginning worker, public health strategist, has a deep rooted passion for substance abuse. So I feel confident that now we have the right team. The CORI goals for the next upcoming year, really, or the CORI overarching four-year goal was by 9/24, so this is into the third year, the CORI team infrastructure would be developed and active. So that goal was achieved on our first CORI run of 2/23 of this year. So, I should have the number of saves we've had.
So the CORI run that she refers to is the response team.
Yes, and I can speak to that. What the individuals that go on this CORI visit to somebody who's just overdosed, we have a contract with Kenosha Fire and EMS, and we modeled it somewhat like the Milwaukee team. The problem is the Milwaukee team, and the difference needed to be recognized that the Milwaukee team has the grant. Public health in Milwaukee does not have the grant. So the model that we chose to uptake from that was the folks that would go up to these homes when we have an identified, so the process is if somebody overdoses, EMS has that information because they were out on the recovery. And so they provide us that information the next day. And we plan to go out. And who makes up that team is two EMS. It's two EMS folks from the fire department and one peer support person, just what Carrie was talking about. We, as public health, because we own the grant, we own the documentation from the run. So our public health strategist goes and stays behind in our van. We have a van that we use as part of this grant. So that those three individuals make up the team, and our public health strategist carries the documentation, and we come back and document it in our electronic health record system, which is in our clinic, but other services in the health department also use it. So that's what it looks like. We have 2 days that we go out in the week. One is Tuesday and one is Friday. We're adjusting the times because one of the times that was chosen early on is 9 a.m. in the morning. Well, you don't knock on a door at 9 a.m. in the morning and routinely get somebody to answer, especially in that community. What else can I share with you about that?
And the goal of the team is to be able to connect with the individual. The role of EMS is to make sure that they're knowledgeable on what it could happen to them if they continue to use and possibly overdose.
Plus safety.
Correct.
Safety. They come dressed. But there's a very big distinction between how they dress and look as Kenosha Fire versus Kenosha PD. Because usually people won't open the door for the police department, but once they identify themselves as Kenosha Fire and EMS, they often open the door. I can tell you, I hold a story that I think this was actually one of our first quarry runs. We approached the house. We had just had a 15-year-old overdose 2 days prior. He was rescued from his overdose, but he was transported to Children's and was currently in the ICU and already had a plan to go to inpatient rehab after that. The mother answered the door, and we shared with them who they were and that we recognized that they had a family member who has an issue and just recently had an overdose. And we have a lot of recovery materials and materials where they can get assistance if they want assistance right at the moment. Or we give them connection, think about it and call us. But this mother said to us specifically, this is what's going on with my son now, and as long as you're here, I need help. So from what we learned, the 15-year-old was getting the medication mostly from his mother, who was also a user. So that's really those are the two main overarching goals. We haven't let up on Narcan training. And I think one of the successes in some of the saves that we've just recently seen is that just in February, we completed training with Kenosha PD who hadn't carried Narcan before. So I think all in all, collectively, it's a wonderful opportunity to get resources to them. We talked earlier about should we right at the scene ask for that. There may be an opportunity at the scene, but oftentimes they need to be transported to the hospital and they're just coming out of their overdose from a physical perspective, so it may not be the right time. But if we have both models, we might be successful. One gap that we have right now is we only receive information on those overdoses that have occurred where Kenosha EMS has been the responder to the overdose. What we're missing is a huge gap from the emergency departments. We had all these deaths this past week, but we didn't receive any of the information because they weren't EMS. Some of them were deceased, so they didn't have an EMS call. So we're working with both hospitals here in Kenosha to get information, sign MOUs so we can get the information so we can respond to those patients as well.
Thank you for that. I've had a huge concern with that grant.
Yes.
And how big it was and how we might be misusing it.
Yes.
All along. And it's refreshing to hear that we have a handle on it and we're meeting the actual goals.
Yes.
Of the grant. So
yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Just a couple quick questions. Great job on the book, by the way. I just want to start out with that. In calling the information line, is there an actual live person on that, under that line?
I'm most of them, yes. I don't know which one you're specifically talking
about.
I'm
talking about the behavioral health here. Let's get a time specific 8 to 5.
Oh, yeah, that's for the resource center. Yes, that's
and
only.
If someone wants to get some information after that, then what happens?
Goes to crisis.
It goes to crisis.
It can go to crisis, and crisis can field a lot of the questions.
Okay.
And that's always really depend on the accessibility of crisis, how busy they are. They can spend a lot of time taking those calls. A supervisor will tell you that we have had a couple of opportunities to ask that contractor to expand the time of service
right.
of the resource center, and We certainly hope with their staffing shortages, we could get to that at some point, but it's been really difficult to for them to find somebody to work that swing shift.
We really wanted somebody on second shift, somebody that was in the resource center.
But that's what I've seen the time there, and I'm thinking.
They weren't able to staff that. I tried for over a year to staff that.
Yeah.
But it does go to crisis, so if there is someone in need,
right,
someone is going to be able to respond quickly.
Because I guess my concern is I want everybody to get a fair share.
Absolutely.
An opportunity to get help,
yep,
no matter what time of day it is.
I did bring, we talked about all these resources that we give out and all of the outreach that we do. I did bring a sample of almost everything that we provide. One of the things that we do put out is what can you do right now? There is absolutely no reason why you should have to wait. These are all numbers that you can call from your cell phone, in your living room, in your car, on your break at work. You can be anonymous and there's no charge to you. So these are all calls that you can access immediately. So we just really want to make sure.
I like the dual language too.
Yeah, absolutely. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, you're fine.
Yeah, okay. All right. So it take them, should you want. I do want to just give one more plug, Supervisor Gentz, to the Quarry Project. I have had quite a bit of conversation with Chief Patton over the last couple of days, and Lori had shared that they have just recently trained all of KPD to carry Narcan. And last week, while a city officer had someone pulled over for a suspected DUI, as that officer was in the front seat searching this individual's purse, he started to become feeling overwhelmed, lightheaded, tingling hands and legs, and he was alone, and was able to go over and said, I think I'm having a medical event. And two KPD officers responded, now both carrying Narcan and administered Narcan to a KPD officer who had a fentanyl exposure just last week. So incredibly impactful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I do have a couple questions to piggyback on that, specifically to the Narcan. So what is the biggest or the most common way these Narcan uses are being reported? I know we have the number on the back. How are you getting this information back? Because it seems like from the beginning we weren't getting anything.
Right,
now
yeah,
right. Like they're starting to stream in. So where are they coming from?
Right. So we get a daily report. I still get the report. I know Lori gets the report from the city of Kenosha. So those saves that I talked about, those all came from that,
yes,
that report that we received.
So the
daily.
Police department?
Yes.
Okay.
Every save, we get a report.
Well, it's a save.
Yeah.
Police and EMS, yes.
Excellent. Yeah. And then
we also get it from Twin Lakes, I should say.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They don't have the numbers that the city of Kenosha does. We're working to kind of get those in between. However, it's a different program that the other EMS agencies use. So we're working to figure out what's the best way to get the data without having to give them a lot more work to have.
What about our sheriff's department?
Same thing.
Yes.
Yep. The data. We can get there. We're just
so
we task the easiest
one. It's not
one.
Live yet, but
we're on it. Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The kudos again to the book. I was on the phone with Carrie and she was walking me through it online. It is on the homepage for Brave River Health.
Yep.
Again, there's an electronic version of this that you can, because I was on the phone with her and I clicked through it, and so the digital version of this is right on our website. I noticed there's a lot of QR codes. This is a kind of a geeky question, but are you guys tracking? I believe some of these QR codes you can actually track how many scans
yes.
you have. Are you able to get that
yes.
data?
We couldn't afford the deluxe QR code version,
yeah.
which would give us like this report of who's scanning what page and who's going to where, but we are able to get a utilization report. It's a little bit more, you know,
yeah.
rudimentary than
and
what
my,
we would
and
expect.
My thinking
but,
is if we
yeah.
are getting a lot of mobile usage, you know, there
yeah.
may be an opportunity for an app down the road or just an
yep.
mobile optimized site to
sure.
kind of cater to that audience
mm-hmm.
If we're getting used, you know, and make sure we're actually getting people access to this on their phones quite a bit.
And we
so.
Do have the guide also, Supervisor, in Spanish, both English and Spanish, online
oh,
and printed.
And the last question I had, the marketing firm that you guys are working with, this may be something for them, it may be something for one of our employees with a cell phone, but it may be beneficial on our behavioral health website or on the health department's website. Just to do like a video walkthrough of someone walking into the job center, you know, and then just walk them through the different scenarios. Say, hey, I'm a vet looking for help. Well, you come in this building and here's Ollie Nelson's office. Or, you know, I'm here to, you know, where's our clinic? Just
yeah.
literally walk someone
right.
through the doors, direct them, you turn left here. Because I found the tour that we had with Dr. Freiheit As new supervisor, she walked us through the entire building and said, this is where you go for this, this is where you go for that. I had been in the building before, but my knowledge was very limited about where everything was. So just an idea, maybe that's something your marketing team can handle, or it's easy enough to do, little cost, you know, on a cell phone, you know, record it, post it to YouTube. Doesn't have to be complicated.
Right, no,
but that came to mind. Yeah.
We do have one, because we're developing our behavioral health YouTube channel, we do have one, a walkthrough as someone walks into the resource center.
Excellent.
Yeah.
The behavioral health resource center.
Yeah.
And even, I believe, because is it at the job center where we have the closet for rental for, like, the disabled, elderly?
Yeah, and no rental, it's loan closet.
It's loan closet, okay. So, like, hey, you have something to drop off.
Yep.
Walk it in here. So. Yeah, that came to mind during the presentation, so that was something I'd like to pass on.
Thank you. Yeah.
So are there any other comments or questions, supervisors, for the first part? Awesome. All right, well, let's move on.
Last slide is just on the opioid settlement dollars. So we received $1.7 million in 2022 with the interest that we received so far of $39,849. As of 6/30, we had $1.793771 in funds available. We will and do expect an additional $375,000 still in 2023, but we don't know when that will be. This is all information that came from Patty Merrill. So that's where we sit today. We have the only two things that have been approved have been the position and then this peer support training. So very limited dollars have been spent of that pool as of yet. And you can see the peer support on the bottom part is a $13,500 charge to the state of Wisconsin to be able to provide that training.
So we're sitting on just shy of $2 million.
Yes, we are. Yes. And again, that's just the things that we've received. There's still some settlements out there with, we're moving now past the distributors onto the pharmacies and onto some of the other ones. And we do expect those numbers, but we have not received any idea of what they're. We know it'll be less, but we just don't know what it's going to be at this point.
The projection from the state is 2/3 the total amount of the initial, and allocations to counties will follow from the pharmacies exactly as the pharmaceutical companies.
And so some of these settlements we receive on a 9-year basis, some are on a longer year basis, so it's all spread out depending on what the settlement was that was made with the individual distributors.
So we have the money. Can you walk us through the process of getting the money from this $2 million or just under $2 million right now to putting it into action? What does that process look like?
So Carrie chairs the opioid panel, or opioid settlement panel, and I'm also on that panel. And we do receive, people have brought to our attention things that they would like to see. The only two things that the panel has recommended have been these two things yet. Once the panel receives a recommendation, they vote on that. That then is taken to the county executive, and if the county executive approves of it, then it is brought to the board for approval.
There have been multiple recommendations through citizens' comments that weren't intact, or we didn't have enough information in its totality. So someone on the panel would say, we'll gather more information, we'll be more curious about this. So there have been a couple of opportunities. The panel has not chosen to recommend. But we have gathered a tremendous amount of baseline data, and I brought all of those copies. And what I didn't bring, and I can copy for, is I do have the Q1 and Q2 summary of all of the activity, and perhaps I can make copies before you all leave,
or
and you
just
can have
email the committee too.
Okay.
We spent a lot of time with the first couple of committee meetings just kind of going over what the settlement could be used for. It's a very lengthy document, so we wanted to make sure that every panelist was aware that we're not approving something that isn't
allowable
or isn't going to benefit the community as a whole. And then we also gathered a bunch of baseline data so that we could know where the dollars should be the best spent. Mm-hmm. So we did a lot of education with the panelists. There's kind of a variety of people, so we wanted to make sure that everybody had the correct information when they're making these decisions to pass these requests along.
How often does the panel meet?
The panel met for 6 months, January through June. We will now only
monthly.
We are going to meet 3 times for the rest of the year. We've chosen to change the location and the times for to be more accessible to our community to provide outreach. So Chief Hall out at Twin Lakes did offer to host the next opioid settlement panel. So that'll be on the fourth Tuesday of August. I don't know off the date, but it'll be out at 6:30 out at Twin Lakes. And so that notice has been published of when our next meeting will be. The agenda should be up in 2 weeks.
We're going to kind of move it around location so that community members can provide citizens' comment, have it at different times of the day. Just again, same philosophy, so that we can have some citizens have who can't normally attend at, you know, 1:30 on a Thursday afternoon meeting.
Yeah.
And make sure that the community has an opportunity to speak.
Are you in contact with or getting feedback from Sheriff's Department, Police Departments about?
So, Sheriff Zerner, Chief Patton, Chief Hall, Chief Smetana, myself, Rebecca, Glita Brown, Carrie Pint, and Mary Wimette from the Community Health Clinic are all actual members of the panel. So, yes, Sheriff Zerner is at the table and had a lot of great feedback for the peer support specialist and was actually contemplating how he could use peer support specialists in the role of liaison with correctional officers and NAFCARE. So he has a lot of big ideas on how he could utilize those services as well.
Excellent. Is there any other comments or questions about this part? Supervisor Gerson.
Thank you. I think I'm the one that requested this, and we were worried about could we get it in. And it didn't. So thank you very much for bringing it in. And now the committee knows where we are with this.
Yeah.
Probably know very well where we are with this. So thank you.
Supervisor Guy.
I was curious, I had talked before about prevention, and we're moving on the peer support, and we're moving on the in the school thing, but those are certainly things that could come to that panel and be, you know, we could spend money on those things. The other thing is that walk-in clinic, I mean, I look forward to hearing moving forward what a plan might be for that, because I think, what, as kids have something already set up?
They do have a behavioral health clinic, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we did do a bunch of research. We do have a bunch of information on it. Unfortunately, we weren't able to fund it the way we wanted to in the 24 budget. But if it's something that you think we should bring to the opioid panel, we'd be happy to put that.
Oh,
through.
I definitely think so.
Okay.
Definitely think so.
Thank you. Stocker.
What kind of numbers are being tracked to show that either we're improving or we're not improving? You know, how are we measuring success?
On the overdoses?
On really everything that you're
doing.
Right.
So
I can start with prevention, because even though he only started yesterday, I do have an update on the prevention coordinator, because before his first day, the new coordinator, Levi Stevenson, and I were able to meet with the superintendent of Wilmont and the principal. And the idea is we have to start with the baseline data. So Wilmont High School has already done a needs assessment, and we're expecting the results of that needs assessment within the next couple of months. So we're going to take that, truancy reports, youth justice involvement of children out there, out-of-home placements, the students that are self-reporting being engaged in substance abuse behavior or treatment, or reports from family. And so we're going to start with, what does the student body out at Wilmont, what are their needs? What is it looking like? The curriculum, because of course we couldn't get engaged in first semester, but we're going to put together a steering committee of their educators and their parents to figure out what this is going to look like best. And we're also going to provide weekly opportunities to support all of their student services and their school psychologists and their coaches as these real-time situation comes up where kids say, I want help, I want something now. We don't have to wait, oh, we're not in there yet. We're going to get involved right away in the fall. So we're out there every week saying, all right, here are our services. This is where we can help navigating to kids right now as intervention before we can actually get that prevention going. And so it's we don't know if the needle's been moved. We're just going to start with you know, the true numbers.
Sure,
what does it look like absolutely now?
Yet,
yeah.
But it seems like there should be some measurement in place to
mm-hmm.
say, okay, we would expect a reduction in the growth of use.
Right.
Within
so
that
we would want to continue to revisit
or,
all those numbers as
okay.
as our efforts ensue.
Mm-hmm.
And also being realistic about when is it time to abandon, abort, or adopt. on what we're doing, and you know, what does that look like? How do we need to, you know, do we need to call an audible, so to speak?
And for the other programs, I think we can measure the success of our outreach by the number of people that come through our resource centers, amount of phone calls that we take. That means to us that we know we're getting the information out to folks. A lot of our programs have built-in metrics, so for like MAT in the jail, that is tracked. Those folks that are enrolled are tracked, and then, you know, if anybody unfortunately goes back to using, I mean, we have metrics in place for all of those programs, and it's usually dictated by what the grant allows us or what the funder allows us to do. But everything is tracked to ensure that there is something to support that there's a lot of time that goes into a lot of these things, and certainly we want to make sure that we're using our time as well as we can and meeting the most people in the community as we can. So monitoring that is something that Carrie and I are both really engaged in, and making sure that we're looking at numbers to look at what the need is. I think one of those is looking at we go back to talking about that second shift person in the resource center. I mean, that to us, I think that was a great need. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get that person hired with that provider, but just, you know, that's where we saw the needs and trying to get those holes. And we'll go back to that. We're not abandoning it, but we got to wait for this market to get a little bit better with hiring before we can.
So I understand the idea of measuring, giving information out, training, but if that stuff is successful, there should be some impact.
Correct.
On what's happening in
Absolutely.
The community. And so that's
right.
That's the impact
yep.
that I'm looking to hear
yep.
about. So.
And I don't think that we can say that. If you looked at those numbers on that first slide, I mean, we'll have to see what 2023 numbers look like. But if you looked from 21 to 22, I don't know that reflects
right.
that yet. But I think it's going to take us some time to get the correct information out to the folks that are using.
All right. I'm done.
All right. Thank you, Supervisor Stocker. Any other supervisors? Just a quick question comes to mind. How long do we have? Is there a time limit on when we have to spend the money? Is it just it's just there and it has to go through that panel approval process? Then it comes before us to approve it.
Yeah, the clock is not ticking.
Okay.
And I think the longest of the settlements is in 19. We receive funds for 19 years. So we have and there's no you have to spend it within 20 years. You have to do this or that with it. So we've got it for a long period of time.
We just have to be careful when funding programs because it's you know,
exactly.
getting it once.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We have to just, the biggest takeaway when everybody knows we can't supplant, meaning we can't use this opioid dollars and, you know, replace our levy dollars or whatever grant dollars, we really just need to be really careful with that. And what I always want to remind everyone is that we really should be spending money to save lives, plain and simple.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. I really appreciate the presentation. All right, is there any other business as authorized by law? All right, is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Gearson, second by Supervisor Kibicki. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, meeting is adjourned.
I was like, don't comment.
There's other flyers and stuff over here on this table if anybody's interested.
Hello, ma'am. Oh, yeah.
No, not you, ma'am.
You're recording now.
Oh my gosh. I cannot be a grown up.
Our staffs have come in, not one person, like, let me go without knowing if they're being French.
Okay,
are these? I'm recording on this still.
It's obviously signed.
Do you want some?
This is the most dramatic.
Oh, I thought you had like
We have gone to the